It is so wonderfully distilled, with evaporated by the rays of the sun, and then the cloud forms, the wind disperses the cloud, then the water comes out. Distilled, pure water for us to drink. We can't drink ocean water. We can't go to the ocean and fetch the water for our day-to-day purpose. But the Lord is taking care. We are taking oxygen and we are breathing, giving out carbon dioxide. The trees and plants are taking carbon dioxide and giving us back the oxygen. So see how wonderfully the God the Father has made all these arrangements. Now see how much He loves us. And let us recognize His love for us and try to reciprocate. Just as your son is not considering how much you love him and how much you want to speak to him, how much you want him to come to you. Similarly, he is waiting. And that is how we have to express our love for him. And that is the real prayer. My Lord, I love you. My Lord, what can I do for you? Anyway, this way, it went on for quite some time. And you know at the end what he said? He said, I have seen six popes, but I never heard anyone speak the way you did. It's actually an honest admission. The popes can't speak like that, although they are saying God the Father, although they have a very well-recognized situation. But what is the extent of their knowledge? And that is the what makes the difference. We have the knowledge, they don't have. And that's why when somebody is willing, somebody is eager, he finds that when we speak, it has so much substance. They're so meaningful. So this is my one experience with a Christian. Mind you, he's not only a Christian, he is a person who is in the Vatican for last 40 years. He's serving in the Vatican for 40 years. And he must have been quite high up, the way he was dressed up, fine black suit, tie. And you could see that, he must be one of the big officials there. Anyway, that is the thing with the Vatican. Do you want to hear about an experience that I had with a Muslim gentleman? I was flying from Dubai to Bombay, and next to me was the head of operations of Emirates sitting next to me. And so, initially he looked like an European, dressed up in suit and tie, and very handsome, about 40 years old. So we started to talk, and then, we started to speak about what we stand for. He was curious, and we got to know that he was actually a resident of Dubai, United Arab Emirates resident. He is the head of operations of Emirates, and he was coming to Bombay, and he lived in Bombay also for some time, and he spends a lot of time in Bombay, and naturally. And he's the head of the operation of the eastern region, which means the Bombay is the headquarters. It covers that part of Asia, and all the way up to Hong Kong and China. And so anyway, we are just talking about God being one, God being a person, God being the Father, God being the friend. Just the understanding that we have. And he was asking questions, and I was giving the answers about how God is a person, how God reciprocates with us. And I was giving the very simple example, the difference between a living body and inert matter, the difference between a living body and a dead body, the soul not coming from this material world, the soul is coming from the spiritual world, another world, the spiritual sky. And whether we call him Allah or whether we call him Jesus, the God or Jehovah or Krishna, he's the same person. God is one. And he was responding. He's an intelligent person. He was responding and he was telling that initially he didn't believe in God. But certain experiences that he told me about made him God conscious. Then at the end he told me that, you know, I never spoke to anyone like you. Then he meant dressed up in this way, because the Muslims in India have a very strong feeling about saffron colored people, saffron robe people, because the way it has been, the conflict is going on between, you know, RSS, BJP, and sadhus versus Muslims. And so obviously he had his feelings about that. You know, he didn't say very much about that. He said that, I never spoke to anyone who is dressed up like you, but today I feel that I learned so much from you. And then I told him that, you know, our spiritual master started the movement in America, and he once was asked by some Roman Catholic priests in New York. They asked him, why are you converting these Christians into Hindus? And my Guru Maharaj replied that, no, I am not converting the Christians into Hindus or Muslims into Jews. I am simply making better Christians out of the Christians, better Jews out of the Jews, better Muslims out of the Muslims, and better Hindus out of the Hindus. And I told him that, look, I was born in a Hindu family, but I didn't really know what Hinduism meant until I came across my spiritual master. And today I can tell you the real purpose, real objective of different religions is to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as He is. And it was so nice that you are so open with your approach, your questions, and you accepted them so sincerely. And he admitted that, yes, this knowledge was so... So this is how we can see that even a Christian, a hardcore Christian from Vatican, an Arab gentleman from Muslim background, when we speak to them, they immediately recognize that we are not talking about any sectarian thing. We are talking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a very, very conceivable scientific way. It is not a blind faith, but it is a matter of understanding Him as He is. He is one without a second. So why are you creating this conflict under the banners of different religious faith? Anyway, at least we can consider that we are very fortunate that we found Krishna consciousness. We came across Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And today we are situated in absolute knowledge. We found the highest spiritual understanding, the highest spiritual path that will lead us to the ultimate destination with a very clear understanding. That even, what to speak of other different religious groups, even the Hindus, what we have, what to speak of the Hindus, even the Vaishnavas don't have. That is what we got from Srila Prabhupada. Other four Vaishnava sampradayas, they don't have any information, a proper information about Vrindavan. Their destination is Vaikuntha. So, here we are. We have the highest spiritual understanding. That also reminds me, like, I met one Sikh. Sikhs are although very close to Hindus, but here I met one person, very successful family, very well-to-do, and he's from that family. I met him in Dubai, and through one of my acquaintances. And one evening we were supposed to go out. They wanted to take me out in Dubai. They're also there on business. There's a boy whom I knew from his college days, Subodh Dalal. He's the son of India's, one of the Air Force generals' son. And his partner, business partner, Paramjit Singh, Sikh. And so they met me when they got to know that. So when Subodh got to know that I was in Dubai, he wanted to see me. So we met in the afternoon. I invited them for lunch where I was staying. And then they wanted to spend some time with me in the evening. And they wanted to take me out, actually. I said, okay, fine. You know, I'm here for a day, so 2 days. I will go out with them. But then we had a little talk in the afternoon. Then Paramjit changed the plan. He said, he told Subodh, I don't want to go out with Maharaj. I want to spend this 1 hour with him, talking to him. So Subodh called me and I said, fine, that's much better than going out. So they came to see me where I was staying. And that discussion instead of 1 hour, it went on for 3 hours. And not only that, Paramjit was telling, Maharaj, next time you come to Delhi, you must stay with us. Now, you see, the Sikhs, I don't know how much you know about their attitude. They don't really blend with the Hindus. And I was thinking, you know, he may be so favorable, but I don't know how the family is going to take it. So although I said yes, yes, but I knew I'm not going to stay at your place. But through Subodh, he got to know when I was arriving, and here it is. When I landed in the airport, somebody receives me right inside the airport, brings me out, and here is a big car waiting for me. And others also came to see me, and so he drove me to his house. And not only their house, their three brothers have three villas. And I was so surprised to see the family. They became so receptive. And then one evening, I stayed for 2 days, and one evening we had a program, and the whole lot of devotees came from Gurgaon. Generally in Gurgaon is the place where I usually stay. And not only that, his father, Paramjit's father, made a condition. He said, his condition is, whenever I go to Delhi, I have to stay at their house. And last time I met Paramjit was telling me that he found out that Guru Nanak actually met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I said, wow. Like him telling, there is a follower of Guru Nanak, Sikhs, and he is admitting that Guru Nanak met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is how, when one gives us patient hearing, this is how they get affected. All it's a matter of just listening to us, because Prabhupada has given us the highest information. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us the perfect understanding of the spiritual reality. Hemanga, you are nodding your head. You met Paramjit, yeah? You came to their house also, yeah. What do you think of that family? Yeah, and they're very wealthy family actually. Very wealthy family. And his father, he's 80 years old, but is straight as a very fit person. And he told, once he was driving me, we are going to meet some politician. We are going to meet Uma Bharati actually. And he was driving the car. He said, I don't let the driver drive my car. I drive myself. And anyway, so this is it. Like anybody who is willing to listen cannot help but becoming convinced about Krishna consciousness. So how did you like these stories? And I told you, these are not stories, but histories. So the goal is actually, Bhagavatam stories. This is a Bhagavatam story actually. We are just presenting Bhagavatam and this is the result. And why do you have to go that far? Didn't this happen to all of you? Sunimon, were you born devotee? Then what happened? Yeah. What about you, Jamunacharya? So, Mukunda Hari? Met a devotee and something happened without you even knowing what was happening. Isn't it? Rasa Rasik, what about you? Same. Is that the case with all of you? You are not a devotee but became a devotee. How did it happen? Satya?
Through meeting other devotees.
Talking to devotees and look what happened to her. Of course, she has a very special devotee acquaintance. Her cousin is, she is the cousin of Guru Gauranga. And Guru Gauranga actually made her into a devotee. Made her in the sense Guru Gauranga spoke to her about Krishna consciousness. And made her watch Abhacharan. Hare Krishna. So Parikshit Maharaj had been cursed by the Brahmana boy. Are you now back to that scene? Who is that Brahmana boy? Sringi. And he cursed him that he would die within 7 days, being bitten by a celestial serpent called Takshak. Now, what did Parikshit Maharaj do as soon as he got the news? Did he call some snake doctors? To counteract the snake poison? No. He said, okay, I have to leave my body. If that's what the Lord wants, fine, I'm ready. Now see Parikshit Maharaj's situation. Do you remember when Parikshit Maharaj was in the womb of his mother? Then Ashwatthama, the son of Dronacharya, released the Brahmastra to destroy him. The last member of the Kuru dynasty. The only surviving member. Otherwise, besides the Pandava, 5 brothers, everyone was dead in that family. So he was the only surviving member of the family in the womb of the mother. So Ashwatthama wanted to destroy him. But when he was in the womb of his mother, Krishna came and saved him. So when he was in the womb of his mother, Krishna came and saved him. And now, a Brahmana boy's curse is going to make him die. What do we understand this way? from these happenings. These are all Krishna's divine arrangement. When we take shelter of Krishna, when we surrender to Krishna, Krishna takes care of us. Marobi rakhobi jo iccha tohara. And that is the attitude of a devotee. Krishna, if you want to keep me, if you want to save me, if you want to protect me, you can do that. If you protect me, then no one can kill me. And if you want me to die, fine. Because I know, when you want me to die, nobody can save me. So that is a wonderful demonstration of Parikshit Maharaj's submissive attitude. Krishna, you want me to die? Actually, it came in the form, your wish has come in the form of the curse of a Brahmana. It is not that the Brahmana cursed me. That's how Parikshit Maharaj was seeing. It's not that the Brahmana boy cursed me. It is your desire that is manifesting in the form of this curse. So if you want me to, I am not going to be perturbed by that. And in a way I can say that how this Krishna consciousness movement has affected different individuals. Because it's not only that this kind of attitude is demonstrated by Parikshit Maharaj. This kind of attitude becomes common with all those who have taken shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. I will give you an example. Right here, Jamunacharya, his only son died in a car accident and he was totally unperturbed. I was in America at that time. I phoned him. And I even told him, Jamunacharya, I'm coming down. He said, no, Maharaj, there's no need for that. Like, if Krishna wanted, he took him. Krishna gave him to me, and now Krishna has taken him back. So how can one have this kind of faith in Krishna to display this kind of detachment? Anybody in this condition would have been completely devastated. But I saw personally how Jamunacharya and his wife Chitradevi was not affected by that. Why? Because they understood. First of all, everything happens by Krishna's divine arrangement. And their son was not their son. They are Krishna's part and parcel, who came to them as a son, and now that Krishna has taken him. And time again I am seeing how Jamunacharya and Chitra are completely dedicated to Krishna. Their whole purpose is to help Krishna consciousness and see that this movement is spreading all over. So these are the practical demonstration. When we understand, like not only Parikshit Maharaj, why did Parikshit Maharaj develop that attitude? Because of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, anyone who properly accepts the process of Krishna consciousness will develop this attitude. Marobi rakhobi jo iccha tohara. Recently, one disciple of mine in London, she was leaving her body. Whenever I used to speak to her, she used to tell me, Guru Maharaj, I just want to leave. I don't want to continue. And she was, although she had terminal cancer for so long, she was suffering so much, but her spirit was so high, as if she was not at all affected. And when she left the body, she left in such a nice Krishna conscious mood. Another such example in London again was you don't know her, but you know her daughter, that is Janava's mother, Savitri Priya. I got to know that doctor said she has only 7 days left. And I was speaking to her and she told me that she had a dream that I came to see her. I was in America at that time. So when I heard that she had a dream like that, so I said, okay, at least let me try to fulfill that dream that she had. So I immediately took a flight and went there. I was thinking that she would be in 7 days she was going to leave her body, so she must be very bedridden and very sick. So from the airport, I went straight to her house. And as soon as I went there, she got out of the bed to offer me obeisances. I had to tell her, please don't do that. But she wouldn't listen. And then, anyway, I spent some time with her. It was so nice. She was very, very Krishna conscious. She was telling me how much she liked to hear me sing, so I sang for her. She didn't ask me to sing, but she was telling how she plays the CDs and listening to my songs, how much she likes Prabhupada's lectures. And so in that condition, she was, but her spirit was so high, as if I could see that she was not in her bodily platform. And when she left her body, you know how she left her body? She had a bead bag in her hand. She was chanting. And just before she left her body, she lifted her hand, put the bead bag on her head, and she left her body. How can one do things like that? That also reminds me another very wonderful incident. She was only a 22-year-old girl, very beautiful young girl, a disciple of Radhanath Maharaj from Bombay. She developed some incurable disease and she kind of became quite okay, but then that day she got her result for her graduation, and she came home and spoke to her mother, and then she became, all of a sudden, she got this attack. She became unconscious. She was taken to the hospital. She was in the emergency ward, intensive care ward. She was unconscious. Just before leaving her body, she became conscious. And she saw the oxygen tubes and intravenous things and all that. So she said, please take them off. So she wanted, so they took it off. And she said, that please let everybody chant Hare Krishna. Like a 21-year-old girl. She just left while the devotees were chanting Hare Krishna, very peacefully. I often remember her. She was very close to me also. When I used to go to Pune, they used to be in Pune before, I used to stay with them. And she used to cook very nicely. Her subject was home science. And she used to, one of her things that she used to do is she used to cook. And she learned how to cook in the subject. And her mother also was a very good cook. She's a Punjabi family. And she was so lively, full of vitality and very vivacious. And just left her body. And in what kind of consciousness left her body? And time again we are seeing that. And that is the proof of the authenticity of Krishna consciousness. Authenticity of the process that we are practicing. Not only how we live, but how we die also. And that is the final test. Dying to conquer death. Therefore, once I gave a seminar, a series of seminars at different places actually, called The Art of Dying. Krishna consciousness actually is an art of dying, the way to immortality. Through death, we reach the region of immortality. So, Parikshit Maharaj met Sukadeva Goswami, and Sukadeva Goswami explained to him, Lord Parikshit Maharaj asked him, what's the goal of life? And that is the point. What's the goal of life? That's what Krishna consciousness movement is teaching us. What's the goal of life? What should we do with this life? Now that we got this human form, what should we do with it? Should we just lead our life eating, sleeping, mating and defending? No. That is the animal, these are the animal propensities. An animal lives for these purposes. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. But the human form of life has a higher purpose. To fulfill the purpose of its existence. Why we are here. And especially now that we got this very special body. This human body is a very special gift of nature. We have developed intelligence and we have the ability to expand our consciousness. We have the ability to expand our consciousness to such an extent that we can conceive the inconceivable. That is what only the human beings can do. To conceive the inconceivable. Inconceivable, achinta. What your mind can conceive is chinta, thoughts. But this is something that cannot be conceived with our thoughts. That's why it is inconceivable. But this, in the human form of life, can be conceivable. And how is it conceived? If we follow the process, then in our hearts the knowledge will be revealed. Dibya gyan hride prakashita. Tene brahma rida adikavaye muihanti jatsuraya. At the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, this point has been made. What is this Srimad Bhagavatam? Srimad Bhagavatam is the knowledge about that inconceivable, completely independent personality of Godhead. And this knowledge is revealed in the heart. It is not, we can receive knowledge in two ways, with our head and with our heart. Material knowledge we conceive with our head. But the spiritual knowledge we conceive within our heart. This knowledge was first imparted by Krishna to Lord Brahma. Tene brahma rida adikavaye muihanti jatsurayaha. This knowledge was imparted to Brahma by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the heart of Lord Brahma. The knowledge that bewilders even the demigods. Jats muihanti. Bewilders. Jats suraya. Sura means demigods. Even the demigods are bewildered with this topic. They can't understand it. But this knowledge can be imparted. As we sing every day, Dibya gyan hride prakashito. The transcendental knowledge is revealed in the heart. It's revealed in the heart. It's a revelation. How it happens? It happens by Krishna's mercy. The other day, when I was in Bombay in someone's house doing a program, and one question came up. Yamukunda Hari, you were there. So one question came up: is it necessary to have this knowledge? So what I was speaking, she was questioning whether it's necessary to have this knowledge. And I explained to her that it is not a kind of a knowledge that one acquires by reading books. It is a kind of a knowledge that happens automatically. Just like when you are in broad daylight, then you see everything as they are. You don't have to get to know about them by reading books. Right? Say, in broad daylight you come to Ujjain, you will see what Ujjain is like. You don't have to read Ujjain, the geography book of Ujjain, you know, to understand what Ujjain is. You will see what it is. So that is what transcendental knowledge is like, that you don't really have to make an effort to learn. It will automatically be revealed. And in that respect, we can remember, Bhakti Devi has two offsprings, two sons. Do you know who are those two sons of Bhakti Devi? Jnana and Vairagya. So bhakti, when you cultivate bhakti, when you receive the mercy of bhakti, when you have developed bhakti in your heart, then her two sons automatically follow. That is knowledge and renunciation. So that is what Divyagyan is. And this is what this knowledge Krishna gave to Brahma in his heart. So here we go into the creation part of it. Brahma appeared from the navel of the Lord. From the navel of the Lord, one lotus sprouted. And Brahma found himself sitting on that lotus. He didn't know where the lotus was coming from, but he found himself sitting on a lotus, and there was an endless ocean. Just imagine Brahma's situation. He's sitting on a lotus and there is water everywhere. There's nothing but just water. And he doesn't have any recollection of his past. He is fully conscious now, but he doesn't have any memory of his past. So Brahma began to wonder, who am I? Like naturally, that's the first question. What's happening? What's happening here? Who am I? I'm here. Where did I come from? And what am I supposed to do? So Brahma thought that if he climbed down the stem of the lotus, if he reaches the bottom, then he'll find out who he is. Because if he goes to the bottom, he goes to the root, then he'll find out where he came from, because he is coming from that lotus. So for 1,000 years Brahma climbed down but didn't reach the bottom. And it has been described that Brahma came very close to the spiritual personality of the Lord. But because Brahma didn't have the proper vision, he couldn't see it. In order to see the spiritual reality, we need the spiritual vision. So Brahma then climbed up and sat on the lotus again. And the water of the Garbha ocean was splashing against each other. Waves were splashing, creating a sound like tapaha, tapaha, tapaha. And from that, Brahma got the inspiration to go within. The Lord actually provided that inspiration to go within. The point is, okay Brahma, going without, you came to the point of no endless bottom. You couldn't find out, you couldn't find the end. by climbing down or by means of your external endeavor. So now that failed, what other course do you have? Go within. So then Brahma projected his consciousness within his heart. And as a result of that, he saw. Not saw, he first heard a sound. He heard a beautiful sound. What was the sound? Sound of Krishna's flute. And what was the sound saying? Oh, oh. The sound made Brahma think. He just focused on the sound. And then from the sound, he began to hear other words also coming out. And that was Gayatri. In this way, Brahma received the Gayatri. And he kept on meditating on that Gayatri mantra. And as a result of that, the transcendental knowledge was revealed in the heart of Brahma. Tene brahmarida adikavaye muihanti jatsurayaha. He got the transcendental knowledge. What was that knowledge like? What happened to Brahma? And that is Brahma Samhita. Brahma saw the spiritual sky. He was transported to the spiritual sky. He was sitting in the lotus, but now he is in another world. And that world is Chintamani Prakara Sadmasu Kalpa Vriksha. He was seeing a beautiful place with beautiful houses, Prakara Sadmasu. And they were made with touchstones, Chintamani. Kalpa Vriksha, there are many trees, it's a forest, a place full of trees. But all those trees are Kalpa Vrikshas. Chintamani Prakara Sadmasu Kalpa Vriksha Laksha Vriteshu Surabhir Abhipalayantam. He is tending hundreds of thousands of cows. And all these cows are Surabhi cows. The Surabhi cows are also desire-fulfilling cows. Surabhir Abhipalayantam. He is sporting with beautiful damsels, the most beautiful girls. Who are they? Lakshmis. Lakshmi Shahasra Sata Sambhrama Sebhamanam. So this is how he saw. He was transported to the spiritual sky and that's what he is seeing. And then he is seeing Venum Kananta Maravinda Dalaya Taksham Barhavatam. He is playing a flute. He has a peacock feather on his head. His complexion is Samasita Ambudam Sundarangam. His beautiful form has the color of the monsoon cloud or blue sapphire. Shyama Sundaram Achinta Guna Swarupam. And this is how Brahma saw. And the transcendental knowledge revealed in his heart from that. He not only saw the Lord, he saw his wonderful qualities. He saw him as Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishthan. He expanded himself into various incarnations like Ram, Nrisingha, Varaha, Kurma. And that personality, he saw how he is the source of everything. Maya hi jasya jagadanda satani sute traiguna tad vishaya veda vitayamana. He saw the relationship of Maya with him. He saw the relationship with Lord Shiva with him. He saw the relationship with Durga with him. He saw the relationship of Ganesha with him. So in this way he saw everything in the light of that personality. So that is what happened to Brahma. Just by meditating on that mantra, the transcendental knowledge was revealed in the heart. And how did the revelation take place? He was transported to the spiritual world. He was seeing everything face to face. And that's how he was describing in Brahma Samhita. So, in this way, the transcendental knowledge was first revealed in the heart of Brahma. And then Brahma got the instruction, what he was supposed to do. He came here with a purpose, to create. The Lord has done the preliminary creation, but now Brahma has to do the secondary creation. What is the secondary creation in relation to the preliminary or principal creation? In the principal creation, the Lord created the universe. Then He filled up the universe, the innumerable universes generated from the breathing of Mahavishnu. Just like when you breathe underwater, then what happens? The bubbles are generated. So due to the breathing of Mahavishnu, innumerable bubbles are created in the universe, in the causal ocean. And each bubble is an universe. So he entered into each of these universes as Garbhodokshai Vishnu. And he generated water from his own body. He entered there and from his own body he created water and filled up the universe with that water. And then he laid down. The moment he wanted to lie down in that Garbha ocean, understanding his desire, immediately Ananta Shesh appeared there. An expansion of Balaram. Balaram takes care of all the needs of Krishna. All the articles for Krishna's pleasure is an expansion of Balaram. So Krishna wanted to lie, or Garbhodokshai Vishnu wanted to lie in the Garbha ocean. So immediately Balaram expanded himself as Ananta Shesha. Because a snake can lie, float on the water. So he became a snake. And he became the bed of Vishnu. And immediately Lakshmi Devi came and started to serve Garbhodokshai Vishnu. And then from the navel of Garbhodokshai Vishnu came out a lotus. And Brahma was situated in that. So this is how the creation began. That is the real understanding of the creation. And so up to this point, he did all the creation, Vishnu. Mahavishnu, Garbhodokshai Vishnu, and from him came Brahma. And now Brahma got the responsible to do the interior decoration. The house has been built, now the interior decoration. So that is Brahma's responsibility. And this decoration was not done by creating some houses and etc. This decoration was done by creating living entities. So Brahma got to know his responsibility. Now he'll have to create living entities. So Brahma was so powerful that from his mind he could create. In a way, just as Krishna can do same things just by his will, Brahma also has the ability to create from his will. Just like as we know, God said, let there be light. What happened? He simply wanted that let there be light, and there was light. Similarly, Brahma also considered, let there be suns. And immediately four suns appeared. And Brahma said, look, my sons, this is the responsibility I have been assigned with, so you all help me, assist me. Now these sons were situated in knowledge. So they said, sorry, Father, not getting involved into this messy business. We know what it is like. We don't want to get involved in that. So then, Brahma got angry. Like, my son, I am their father, I am instructing them, I am asking them to do something. See how disobedient they are. They don't listen to my instructions. And then, immediately Brahma thought, see, Brahma is so powerful that just from his mind, as he wanted, he created children. So can you imagine what his anger would be like? His anger would immediately destroy these children. So Brahma considered, they are my children. I should not be angry with them because they'll be destroyed. So Brahma restrained his anger. And although he restrained his anger came out in the form of Rudra, Lord Shiva's incarnation in this material nature. Rudra, the aspect of destruction. Then Brahma instructed them. He knew that they're going to be devastating. So Brahma said, okay, you all restrain yourself. Control yourself. You do not... Rather, your business is to control yourself. So that's why you find the incarnation of Lord Shiva. Generally, they are very peaceful. Shiva means peaceful and auspicious. And so this is how Brahma controlled his anger. But although he tried to control his anger came out in the form of these personalities of Rudra. Then Brahma created 10 sons from his mind. Those 10 sons are 9 Prajapati, 8 Prajapatis, Daksha and Narad. Pulasta, Pulaha, Kratu, Angira, Marichi, Vasishta, Kratu, Atri, Daksha and Narad. So these are the 10 sons, and now 9 of them became involved in procreation or creation. Here the creation was mostly in the form of procreation. Producing children. And initial offsprings of Brahma started to come from him through his mind or through different parts of his body. From his shadow appeared a personality, Kardama Muni. From his right hand side came out a personality, Manu. From his left hand side came out a personality, Shatarupa. The first man and first woman. From Lord's right hand side is Manu, from his left hand side, Shatarupa. The first man and woman. And from them started the procreation through union between man and woman. Procreation through copulation. Couple. When the couple united, then the offsprings appear. So then... And this is how Manu is actually our forefather. From this word Manu, from this name Manu, came Manava. Manu's offsprings are Manavas. just as Danu's offspring are Danavas, Diti's offsprings are Daityas, Aditi's offsprings are Adityas. In this way, the offsprings take the name in relation to the father or mother. So Manu is the first man. And Manu then had five children, two sons and one daughter, three daughters. The sons are Priyavrata and Uttanapada. And three daughters are Akuti, Prasuti and Devahuti. Devahuti was given to Kardama Muni, a great exalted personality. And he was told by Lord Brahma that you create offsprings. Because that's Brahma's purpose. The universe now empty has to be filled up. So Kardama Muni considered that in order to do that I have to become qualified. So he went and performed austerities for 1,000 years. And then Brahma was, actually the Lord instructed Manu to offer his daughter to Kardama Muni. Devahuti to Kardama Muni. And Brahma also instructed Kardama Muni that such and such personality is going to come, Sayambhava Manu is going to come to offer his daughter to you. So you accept her as your wife. Now here also we can see another ideal householder. An example of an ideal householder. Like, the moment he heard that he has to procreate, straight away he didn't go and get married. He decided, I have to qualify myself so that my offsprings become qualified. And he performed austerities too, so that the senses are controlled in the thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the way to control the senses. And as I mentioned, the austerities are not austerities to achieve something, but the austerities are the natural outcome of one's attachment to the Lord. So what he actually went to do is to meditate, to focus his mind or fix his mind at the lotus feet of the Lord. That is the goal. And as he did that, he naturally became detached from material attachments. So he and then he is being informed that, well, such and such girl is being brought to you, so please accept her as your wife. So Sayambhava Manu came to Kardama Muni with his daughter, with his wife Devahuti and a few soldiers with him, and offered his daughter. Now, Sayambhava Manu is the ruler. He is the king of the earth planet. Now he is offering his daughter, a princess who never really seen any hardship in her entire life. Now she is being offered to a person who doesn't even have a place to stay. Not that he doesn't have a place to stay, he's not interested in any place to stay. And this girl, the princess, accepted that situation. She is my husband, my goal is to follow him. And prior to that, something also happened. Narad Muni told her about Kardama Muni, and about hearing about Kardama Muni, Devahuti fell in love with him. And accepted him as a husband. She knew that he is a completely renounced, a person who doesn't have any external senses, and she accepted him as her husband. She accepted a lifestyle from the palace to a hermitage on the bank of a river. Of course, a beautiful place. The description of the place is beautiful. There's lots of fruit and flower-bearing trees, colorful flowers, ripe fruits. There are beautiful birds singing. The bees are flying around, humming from flower to flower. There are other saintly personalities who are also absorbed in meditation. So Devahuti accepted that life. And she was serving her husband with all her ability. So much so that she did not care for eating and sleeping and caring for herself. And as a result of that, her body became emaciated. The beautiful princess now became like a skeleton. Her hair, beautiful black hair, now they become matted. Because she didn't care for herself. So this is how, time and time again, from this Vedic description, we can get to see what is an ideal husband should be like and how should an ideal wife be like. The Western culture has destroyed the human culture. The Vedic culture is a real human culture which is based on love, not based on selfish motivations. Just based on, for the sake of her love for her husband, she's prepared to accept any kind of situation. And then, all of a sudden, one day, Kardama Muni happened to see his wife. And he felt, my God, what did I do to my wife? She's a princess, and look what happened to her. Her beautiful body has become emaciated like a skeleton. Her beautiful hair has become matted. Her body has lost all the luster. And all for my sake. She's taking care of me in such a way that she didn't care for herself at all. So now Kardama Muni is going to display his mystic power. So he immediately created a chariot. It's not a chariot. It was a city with the ability to fly. That place was filled with demigods dancing and singing. Bidadharas are dancing, Gandharvas were chanting. And so many other beautiful men and women ready to serve them. And it has been described that it is a kind of a chariot that even Indra, the king of demigods, can't even imagine in his remotest dream. The king of demigods cannot even imagine such a chariot in his remotest dream. And he also created one lake. And that lake, he asked his wife, Devahuti, go take a bath in the lake. So when she went there, she found there are so many celestial damsels ready to serve her. Some took her by hand and into the water. Some started to scrub her body, massage her body. And in no time, she assumed a form which is the most beautiful, so much so that even the demigods would become stunned looking at her. And when she came out, she found that Kardama Muni also has assumed such a beautiful, handsome form. And then together they traveled in that spaceship. And the spaceship could expand according to one's desire. And go to any place according to their desire. And in that spaceship, for a long time, they traveled around the three parts of the universe. Upper, middle and lower. And then they came back to their abode. There Kardama Muni accepted his form as a sage. And 9 daughters were born. 16 daughters were born from them. And then he was about to leave. So Devahuti told him, "My Lord, you promised me to give me a son. So please fulfill that commitment of yours." So then Kardama Muni stayed back. And the Lord then came to Kardama Muni and said that, "I have been so pleased with you that I'm going to accept, I'm going to become your son." And that is Kapil Muni. So when after Kapil Muni was born, Kardama Muni told him that, "My Lord, if I see you as my son, I won't be able to properly meditate on you. So I'm leaving now, so that from a distance I can fix my mind at your lotus feet." So here we can see that Kardama Muni's relationship with Krishna was in Santaras. In Santaras, he simply wanted to meditate upon the Lord. Even though the Lord has appeared to him as his son and he could develop Vatsala Ras, he didn't want to accept it. That's why it says, "Jar jei roshai shei sarbottam." Whatever one constitutional mellow is, he considers that to be the highest. He considered that to be the highest. So, he then left home to meditate upon the Lord. And he assured Devahuti that, "I am leaving you under the custody of my son." And Kardama Muni instructed Devahuti, Kapil Muni instructed Devahuti on Bhakti Yoga. And he came to re-establish Sankhya Yoga. So Kapil Dev has established the proper Sankhya. There are 2 types of Sankhyas are prevalent. One is atheistic Sankhya and the other is devotional Sankhya or theistic Sankhya. There are 2 Kapils also. There is one Kapil who was born in an Agni dynasty, a king. He is born in a royal family. He became a saintly personality and he propounded the Sankhya philosophy, which is atheistic. It's analyzing the material nature without accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the real Sankhya is theistic Sankhya. The real goal of Sankhya is to transcend the material nature and come to the spiritual reality. In the 11th canto, Uddhava, when speaking, he is also speaking about Sankhya, and he spoke about various types of Sankhyas. The Sankhyas that are dealing with 16 elements, Sankhyas that are dealing with 24 elements, Sankhyas that are dealing with 26 elements, 26 considerations. But in Bhagavad Gita also we get Sankhya. As I was saying, the purpose of Sankhya is to transcend the material nature and come to the spiritual platform. And what is that that Krishna gave in Bhagavad Gita in just 4 lines? Bhumi rapo analo vayu khang mano buddhi revacha ahankara iti angme bhinna prakriti ashtadha. Now with this 8 consideration, Krishna analyzed the entire material nature. Bhinna prakriti ashtadha. But then he considered, apareyam itastannan prakritiṃ viddhi me param. These are separated energy of mind. But beyond that, there is a superior energy from which the living entities are coming and they are sustaining this material nature. Sankha ultimately goes into that point. Objective, the object and subject. This external world is object. No matter how we analyze it, with 8 considerations or 25 considerations, it's external. But that is objective. But object rests on the subject. The subject is I. Jajedam dharjate jagat. This living entity, the I, is sustaining this material nature. Dharjate jagat. We are here, that's why material nature is manifest. When none of us will be here, then what will happen? When there is nobody to witness this material nature, what will happen? The material nature will become unmanifest. Abhakta dini bhutani vyakta madhani bharata. Abhaktan nidhanan neva tatra ka paridevana. So, this nature was, material nature was unmanifest. It became manifest and then it will become unmanifest again. When it becomes manifest, when the Lord glances towards this material nature. Through the glance of the Lord, the living entity has come into the material nature. And the material nature becomes manifest. And when the Lord withdraws his glances, then all the living entities are withdrawn from the material nature. Then the material nature becomes unmanifest once again. So, Kapil Muni actually gave the perfect Sankha philosophy. But to his mother what he gave is bhakti, pure devotional service. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I just kept a few minutes, about 20 minutes for question answers. So, any question? Okay, some written questions are here. Okay, give the mic to her. Well, at the beginning, some resource had to be there. They had to come from one. So Brahma was. So here we have to understand that these two separate parts of Brahma were actually the male and female. Although they came from the same personality, but they are not brother and sister in that sense. Okay? Hare Krishna Maharaj, this question is from, thank you, okay, Rasamrita Devi Dasi. Where is Rasa? Okay. Your interaction with the people of various faiths shows your deep compassion for all living entities. May I ask you to speak about the qualities and mood that we should develop as preachers of ISKCON so that we too can impact on the people that we meet. Rasamrita Devi Dasi also, that's the second question? Yeah. So this is the first and that's the second. Well, I don't know what to say. Only thing I can say is that I like to talk. So whenever I find somebody to talk to, and oftentimes we get a nice result. And actually often I make acquaintance with people in my flight. The other day also, I was flying from Bombay to Calcutta. And next to me, there was one person, We can see that, you know, he's a quite a successful businessman. And we started to talk. And I didn't really feel any such compassion, to tell you frankly. But as I said, I like to talk. So he started to talk. And what can he talk about? We can talk about only one thing, Krishna consciousness. Or rather, try to make things lead to that point. And this person also, at the end, he told me that he was religious. He was religious, but that was about all. He did not really have any interest or... But after talking to me, you know, he felt that this is something that one should seriously consider. Not just, you know, go to the temple and offer obeisances and prayers with some desire, dhanang dehi, janam dehi. Give me money, give me this, give me that. And it's like that, you know, we develop some relationship. Day before yesterday, or 2 days before yesterday, I was in Bombay. And I told my secretary, Ananda, to call him up. And he came to the program. And in that program also, some of you also were in that program. And when he was leaving, he thanked me for you know, enlightening him. He learned so much, he was telling me. So, that's how it is. We talk and some people like to hear. Next question. When the knowledge is revealed in the heart of Lord Brahma, is the knowledge already situated in his heart, or must it be what's that? Transferred. Must have been transferred there. Okay. Yeah. See, Jiva is also Satchidananda. Chit. The knowledge aspect is there in him. Only thing is, it's covered. The knowledge is there with the Jivas, but it's covered. So what cultivation of Krishna consciousness does is removes the covering. Just consider a bulb. If there's a black paint on it, will any light come out? So the light is there inside the bulb. All we do is scrub the black paint off, then automatically the light come out. Similarly, the spirit soul has the knowledge, but it is a matter of removing the external covering. Then the knowledge automatically shines forth. Thank you. Okay, some more questions here. This is from Palika. Where is Palika? Okay. Dear Maharaj, please accept my obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. You are talking about how if people just listen to a devotee, then their heart can be transformed. How can we make someone favorable to hearing about Krishna without causing offense? Why should there be any offense? You are bestowing your mercy. Why should... This is mercy, not offense. Well, if somebody doesn't want to listen to you or talk to you, then don't bother about it. Don't waste your time. Talk to those who want to listen to you. Okay? If somebody feels offended, then what's the point in talking to him? Give her the mic. Yeah, that's the thing I said. For example, a Muslim, if he feels offended if you talk to him about Hinduism, so-called, then why waste your time with him? There's so many people who may be willing to listen to you. You got the point? Like, listen to, and speak to somebody who is willing. Right? Our business is not to grab one by his neck and is that Devahuti? Yeah. Devahuti, this is your question? Okay. Dearest Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances at your divine lotus feet. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to your divine grace. Although I have been blessed with a human form and have been introduced to the process of Krishna consciousness, I must honestly admit that despite hearing, experiencing and realizing the authenticity, power of Krishna consciousness, authenticity and power of Krishna consciousness, I fail to follow uninterruptedly or spontaneously. What should I do? Okay, just carry on doing it, whatever you are. Just keep on chanting, read Prabhupada's books. That's the thing that you must do. Chant at least a few rounds every day. I know you are very busy. So it may not be possible to chant 16 rounds. It may not be possible for you to read for 1 hour. But at least make it a point to chant, make it a point to read some pages, and make it a point to associate with good devotees whenever you have time. I know you're so busy that you don't even get time to eat. That's what your mother told me. And Devahuti is actually studying to become a judge. Like there is a thing, there is a course that you make that, complete that course and then you become a judge straight away. I mean with some training though. So it's you can see that it's very, very arduous. It takes a lot of effort. Nothing comes easy. So, but still you are chanting, so continue. You see, you are in a situation where you cannot really commit yourself to, as you said, uninterrupted and unconditional devotional service. Okay, that's not possible. So go through whatever you are going through and then become fully surrendered to Krishna. You know that that's the goal. It may not be now, it may not be possible now. Like see, for example, a child. When is a child, then it behaves in a certain way. It's expected that a child would behave in that way. But when the child grows up, then the child behaves in another way. So if you're a child now, behave like a child. And then when you grow up, it'll happen. Okay? Thank you. Some questions from the internet. Also, Nrisinghananda Das from South Africa. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, when the creation is destroyed, all living entities enter into the body of Mahavishnu. During the creation, other living entities projected into the material world through the glance of Mahavishnu or through Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, as in the case of Lord Brahma. Your servant, Nrisinghananda Das. Yeah. So glance is from Mahavishnu, Nrisinghananda. It is Mahavishnu's glance that makes the material nature agitated. She was inactive, and now she became active. She became agitated due to the glance. As if by the glance of a man, a woman becomes agitated. So the ultimate man looks at the ultimate woman, the material nature. And material nature becomes agitated, and the living entities are now projected. So the point is, it is through the glance of Mahavishnu that the material nature conceives the living entities. So, next is Dhira Gaura Das. Okay. Dhanavat Pranam Guru Maharaj, please accept my most humble obeisances. You mentioned that it was the desire of Krishna that Parikshit Maharaj should leave and age of Kali should begin. So is it also Krishna's desire that people in Kali Yuga should commit sinful activities in order to help Kali Yuga grow? Yeah. It's not Krishna's desire. You see, the living entities in the material nature get an opportunity to act independently. And Krishna doesn't interfere in that. So every living entity has his independence to act the way he wants. And as I mentioned in the morning, a living entity actually has the independence to only do two things. Either look at Krishna or look away from Krishna. That is the only independence we have. When you look away from Krishna, then you plunge into this cycle of birth and death. But when you look towards Krishna, then you go back to the spiritual sky. So it's just a matter of, looking. Which way should you look? Which way should you project our consciousness? Towards Krishna or away from Krishna? When it is projected away from Krishna, it is Maya. We are in the domain of Maya. Krishna's external energy. When it is projected towards Krishna, then is projected towards Krishna's internal energy. That's the only independence we have. Now, you see, as a result of our activities, we create karma, right? Karmic reactions. And those living entities, those who have acquired a lot of sinful karma, they come to the age of Kali. They get their body in the age of Kali. And they get a chance to become very, very sinful. Right? They get a perfect situation. Because they're sinful, they want to be sinful, their sinful reactions take a shape and they get an opportunity to act accordingly. Right? But here also they have one advantage, to look towards Krishna. And the benefit is, the moment we look towards Krishna, then the result is inconceivable. Just making a little towards Krishna, and immediately Krishna's mercy comes down to pick us up. All you have to do is just have faith, chant the holy name. Krishna will do the rest. That's the advantage of the age of Kali. Okay? Dhira Gaur. So, next question is from Dilkush. Okay. Very good. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, my question is, why different people give different philosophy regarding our Supreme Personality of Godhead? Although there is only one way to achieve Him is Bhakti Yoga, because that is creating confusion in choosing the way to achieve the Supreme. Okay, so no more question. Ei dutoi thak ar niye na. Yeah. You see, as I mentioned, in the material nature, everyone has the independence to act the way he wants. Similarly, one has the independence to speak the way he wants. So if somebody wants to say blah, 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 he has the independence to do that. So, and the point is, different people, they see they get different ideas and they present it. And as you say, that they confuse. They confuse because they are confused. What will happen when you follow a confused individual? Do you think following a confused individual you get sanity? Following a confused individual you just get confusion. So that is the problem. And as you said, yes, life would have been much better without them. And that's why our point is, don't worry about them. Just carry on with your Krishna consciousness. Right? And if you come across somebody who is, you know, speaking all kinds of nonsense, instead of getting into arguments, you know, you say, okay, take. And if they're willing to listen, then you can give them the right knowledge. Okay. So this is from Suraj from Leicester, England. Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. My question is, what was the purpose of Lord Brahma's incarnation? Yes, what was the purpose of Brahma's incarnation? What was the purpose of Buddha's incarnation? Very good. Suraj, it's a very nice question. You see, the purpose of Buddha's incarnation has been described in the Dasavata Stotram by a great devotee poet, Jayadev. He wrote a beautiful book, book of glorification of Krishna, called Gita Govindam. And these 10 slokas describing 10 different incarnations are the invocation of that. So, different incarnations of the Lord has been described, the purpose of their incarnation. And Buddha's incarnation has been described as Nindasi Jagga Viderahaha Shruti Jatam Sadaya Hridaya Darshita Pashu Ghatam Keshava Dhrita Buddha Sharira Jaya Jagadisha Hari. Nindasi Yagga Viderahaha Shruti Jatam. The concept of sacrifice that developed from the Shruti or Vedas, he Nindasi, he said that that's not necessary. There's no need to perform sacrifice. Why? Because in the name of sacrifice, innocent animals were being slaughtered. And seeing that unnecessary slaughter of animal in the name of the Vedas, the heart of the Lord became afflicted. Sadaya, Hridaya, darshita pashughatam. Sadaya means very compassionate hridaya, heart. Very compassionate heart of the Lord became afflicted seeing darshita pashughatam, seeing the slaughtering of animals in the name of the Vedas. So Keshava Dhrita Buddha Sharira. Keshav Krishna assumed the form of Buddha. And as Buddha, what did he do? What did he do? He said there is no need for following the Vedas. Because in the name of the Vedas, the animal sacrifice was going on. What is the best way to stop animal sacrifice? Reject the Vedas. So the activities of the Vedas also will be rejected. So in this way, in order to stop animal sacrifice, Buddha, Lord appeared as Buddha. And he rejected the Vedas, which was re-established by Shankaracharya. So next one is Karunika Devi Dasi. Pranam Guru Maharaj, you said that Kardama Muni was in Shantaras. Please explain more about this quality of Kardama Muni. You see, there are five rasas. So one rasa is called Shanta. Shanta ras is translated into English as neutrality, the mellow of neutrality. Neutral means neither this nor that. Neutral means if you consider the graph. There is axis, the left-hand side of the axis is minus, right-hand side of the axis is plus. The more we move towards the right direction, plus 1, plus 2, plus 3. Left direction, minus 1, minus 2, minus 3, and so forth. And there is the axis, that is zero. Right? It's neither minus nor plus. So that is the meaning of neutrality. Neither inimical to the Lord, nor loving in that sense. Favorable, but not active. And their business or their attitude is to meditate upon the Lord. Right? There is awareness of the Lord, acceptance of the Lord, meditation upon the Lord, but no service, no activity. Right? On the other hand, there are negative activities, the demons are involved in negative activities, the devotees are active in positive activities. But those who are in Shantaras, they are neither negatively active nor positively active. Okay? Okay, thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari. So how do you all like these stories? So the purpose actually was to give the understanding of Krishna consciousness through the stories. So through the stories things become more easily conceivable. More easily comprehensible, understandable.